Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
Previously on the Pavement Top 50.
The number two song on the countdown has been revealed, which means you very likely now know what number one is. Fuck! Jeremy, where are you on the choice of Grounded at number two?
Well, I don't know if I would have ranked it number two, but it is an amazing song, and I really like it. So I'm not too burned by it.
Does it crack your top five?
I would say.
Okay.
Maybe number five.
Hey, this is Westy from the rock and roll band Pavement, and you're listening to The Countdown.
Hey, it's JD here, back for another episode, the final episode before our roundtable episode, which is our actual final episode. But I've got a few ideas for next year. So maybe it's not the final episode. Stay tuned. Stay tuned. At any rate, I am thrilled to be here with you once again, consecutively. This shit doesn't happen to me, man. I don't plan something out and execute. Ah, this is good. You made me feel all good. You made JD feel all warm and fuzzy. Week over week, we've been counting down 50 essential Pavement tracks that you selected with your very own top 20 ballots. I then tabulated the results using an abacus and a VHS box set of Unsolved Mysteries, where every episode now ends with Robert Stack scolding me personally for not tabulating faster. How will your favorite songs fare in the rankings? You'll need to tune in to find out. So there's that. This is the one episode you don't need to tune in to find out. Because if you don't know what the song is today, you just haven't fucking been paying attention. But today, I'm joined by Pavement superfan, Robert from Columbia, Missouri. And Robert from Columbia, Missouri just happens to be the producer-editor of a film called Pavements that will be out in the future. Robert from Columbia, Missouri, how the fuck is it going?
That's going good. You know, just still technically living. We're talking to each other from my basement where most of the work on Pavements was done once it got to the edit stage. So I feel like I'm still living in it, even though the film is very done.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool to think that it was done there. And especially from an editing standpoint, we'll get into that after we talk about your Pavement origin story, but let's do that. Let's hear your Pavement origin story.
So the first question is, when did I first hear Pavement? And I have this vague sense of, I grew up in North Carolina in a rural county called Union County, North Carolina. And I have this vague memory of hearing Nirvana's Bleat and a couple of other like sort of real indie rock stuff in whatever, like 90 or something. And I remember hearing someone mention Pavement, and I don't remember connecting the dots, and I was like 14. And so it's just sort of like, oh, that sounds cool. Or it sounded cooler than I was at the time at all. Like I was like, and that was my first impression really was, whatever this is, it's way cooler than me. Like I'm still listening to Motley Crue, you know, like I'm still totally into, you know, that generation of things. And maybe I'm starting to like, you know, definitely had listened to REM at that point. Definitely had been like, okay, there's like grown up rock kind of is what I kind of thought of it as. Or, and I also was like, definitely like they're girls who like alternative music. And I would like to talk to those girls because the metal girls seemed a little weird to me, you know, like that kind of thing. And then, but that's just like a vague sense of something. And the real origin story is I go to college. I went to North Carolina State University and I went to, you know, so NC State is part of this region called the Triangle in North Carolina, where you got Duke, you got North Carolina State. And importantly for this story, you got Chapel Hill. And in Chapel Hill, there was a place called the Cat's Cradle, and the Cat's Cradle was one of the hotbeds for indie rock in the 90s. And so this is like 94, 95. I get there and I just happened to meet these dudes, this guy, Thad Anderson, this guy, Mike Testa, this guy, Danny Margolis, who are like, had grew up in in Raleigh and grew up going to Cat's Cradle shows. And they knew, in my mind, they knew everything about indie rock music that you could know.
Oh, and wow.
And Mike's favorite band was Pavement. And so there's a line in the movie Pavements where Malcolm says he wasn't the Fall fan in his school, which I love. I put that line in there because I love the idea that there was a moment in time where you could be like, oh, that's the Fall guy, or that's like that's the Guided by Voices guy, that's the Echo and the Bunnymen guy, that's the, you know, like, or that lady knows everything about, you know, what, you know, I don't know, the Sugar Cubes. So she's like the Sugar Cubes lady, you know, whatever. So like that was, Mike was the Pavement guy. And so was Thad. And so I remember just being like, this is my favorite music I've ever heard. I borrowed his Crooked Rain CD and played it repeatedly over and over and over again. And just was like, I felt like my brain had opened up in a new way, and I just was like, there's some kind of intelligence here and coolness that I just had never felt before. It felt like the person, I felt like listening to Pavement made me feel like the person I wanted to be one day when I grew up, kind of. And it was like, and I was just like, I was so locked into it, but I remember being like, well, but it can't be my favorite band. Like it's Mike's favorite band, right? And then I remember when Wowie Zowie came out, I was just like, well, I get to at least say I got that record on day one, you know? But the summer after our, you know, when we got to the end of the year, I kind of stole Mike's Pavement CD for the whole year. Like I took it home with me, and I don't remember, it must've been some sort of Freudian desire to like, I needed to have that with me. I needed to own that and it needed to be with me. And he's just like, you know, you took my Crooked Rain. And I was like, oh man, dude, I'm so sorry. And I just listened to it nonstop. And then I came back and I was just like, and you had to be a little bit shy. Like you couldn't just be like, yeah, they're my favorite band too. Like you had to be like coy. Like, so I remember being like, well, I got to go find. So I like K Records and Built to Spill became my thing. And I was like, well, that's lame because it's just a knockoff of Pavement. I just want it to be Pavement, you know? And so Wowie Zowie, I could then say it's my favorite record of all time. I got fully wrapped up in Wowie Zowie, and that's the rest is history. I never stopped liking and thinking about Pavement.
Wow. Did you get to scratch that itch and see them live at the Cradle ever?
They never played at the Cradle, actually, when I was there. They played in Winston-Salem. So I got to go to a couple of Winston-Salem shows. And, you know, they were completely disappointing and thrilling at the same time. This was the era, I think this was the era where, like, I mean, they were playing Crooked Rain songs the first show I saw, and then a lot of Wowie Zowie the second. And then I saw a Bright in the Corners show, too. I forgot where I saw that, but maybe Raleigh. But they never played the Cradle, actually, when I was there, which we always thought was weird. But they must have had some sort of deal to play Winston-Salem, which was like an hour and a half drive. And it was worth it, of course. But yeah, this was the era where, like, I remember when I first met Malcolmus, I was like, are you going to like try tonight? And he's like, yeah, we used to think it was cool not to try. And I was like, well, I thought you thought that, but I never thought that you thought you thought that. I thought you just thought you were fucking with people. And so anyway, yeah, I remember that show very well. It's like one of those shows where I remember where I was on the right of the stage looking over at everybody. Bob was screaming the whole night and Malcolmus was like intentionally messing up every song. And it was glorious. It was like, and at the end, of course, you couldn't complain. You can never be like, man, that show sucked. you always had to be like, man, that show was brilliant. They really messed with me and made it not fun. I really appreciate how unfun that show was, you know? And of course, the irony is seeing them on the 2022-2023 tour several times, like, they became the best live band I've ever seen. Like, the way that they honed, and I think you see it in the movie, they really honed their craft over the years to the point where they were just like an efficient, like Pearl Jam level efficiency of playing those badass songs. And I was just like, it's sort of shocking level of musicianship for a band that I always remember just being like, oh, you're deliberately. And then, of course, the thing it was is like they would deliberately mess with every single song. And then there would be these stretches of transcendence that would make it all worth it. And that, I mean, and I would say even in the thinking of the movie, I know we're not ready to talk about that yet, but that's what we wanted to capture in the movie, was that feeling of like undercutting something and celebrating it and being smarter and also being completely ridiculous all at the same time, which is the experience of definitely the experience of the records. And even more so, I think, seeing them live back in the day.
You know, I think you really, again, we're shifting back and forth between your origin story and the movie a bit, because I think, while it's on my mind, I want to commend you on the grounded piece in the movie. It represents a lot of what you just said. You know, you see the musical happening, and the band playing at the Fonda, various, you know, there's a lot of editing going on there. There's a lot of gutting. So we'll definitely get into that. But that grounded scene is really cool.
Well, it's one of the great songs of all time. I mean, it's one of the great rock songs ever written. It's like it when they, you know, a record like Wowie Zowie, when they could just do all these different things, every single song feels like a new universe. You're entering a new a new universe. And they just pull out this like perfect, you know, like, I mean, Led Zeppelin never made a song that's that magisterial. Like, it's just has this like emotional impact and effect and perfection that I think, you know, so in the movie, we had to dial in and really make that like a moment. Now the issue was, because the movie has 25 endings, you know, intentionally, it's structured like Wowie Zowie. The record is structured where you think it's over and then you think it's over and you think it's over. And then finally Western Holmes plays, you know, there was times where the movie felt like you really didn't need to see anything else after listening to Grounded. And so we had to there was a version of that was even more effective, I think, but we had to cut it down a little bit just so you weren't getting completely satiated, so that, you know, you were actually geared up to watch the rest of the movie, because that could have been the end of the film.
It really could have been, because it's culminating. But I was, you know, I was more than ready to keep watching. So funny, the Grounded ended up being number two on this countdown. And we'll get to what number one is, shortly. I'm sure nobody knows what it is, but, yeah, Grounded number two. Summer Babe was number three. Or no, sorry, Gold Towns was number three.
I mean, they're all good. I sometimes I'm just like, you know, Strings of Nashville is my favorite song. Sometimes I'm just like, you know, I mean, Circa 1762 is a song that was, I didn't even hear until later in my, Pavement was one of those bands that was always like, it was the defining thing of the 90s in my mind. The great bands were the ones where their best songs were not on the records. And like Easily Fooled, never properly released. And Easily Fooled is one of the great songs of all time, you know? And like, and Guided by Voices were like that too. You know, the 7-inch songs were better than the record songs. I remember even when before we thought Beck was an idiot, like all the best Beck songs were never released properly, you know, like things like that. So that was always the test. And Pavement had the best songs that were unreleased songs that you could only hear. I remember there was just versions that you could only hear on VHS. I mean, not VHS, on audio cassette tapes that you're just like, I've got this one tape with this one version of Easily Fooled that I feel like it's special. Of course, now that's all gone. You could stream anything, which is great. Because my daughter, who's now 17, and you know, Pavement is her favorite band. You know, she knows all the live versions and all the B sides and C sides and D sides that I used to think were like you know, jewels that I had discovered in the dirt or something. She's like,
well, they sort of were. You had to dig for shit.
You did.
Like, you really did.
You did. And she doesn't get that, but it's also easier because she just like, oh yeah, this is my favorite version of Easily Fooled. And I was like, you're so lucky to be able to say that, you know, you ever had a version of Easily Fooled.
I like what you guys did in the movie, because I've always said this on this show about Wowie Zowie, is I think the reason it's such a popular record is because it's half regular songs and half B-sides. And you actually say that in the film.
Nat Wolff is playing Spiral and he's like, I thought, you know, you get rid of the B-sides or whatever. And then Joe Keery, who's playing Malkmus, says, you know, putting the B-sides on the record, is that sounds like smart business or whatever. It's like, and this yes. is all that stuff is based on what people actually said to Alex Ross Perry, the writer, director of the film. And he wrote those scenes from interviews and then he made it, you know, in the film, it's an intentionally horrible biopic, like meant to look like crappy Oscar bait. And so the things like that, those lines, pithy little lines like that were very useful.
Based on what you just said, I wonder if you even have like a go-to at this point. Is it still Crooked Rain? Or
no, I mean, Wowie Zowie is my, I mean, look, I my grading of, I mean, so Slanted, okay, well, the Westing, I went through a phase where I would listen to that as if it was a record. Of course, it's not a record. It's a collection of 7 inches, and they're really meant to be listened to as 7 inches, you know, like as EPs. But I still find great joy in that record. I still pop it on, and like, I just want to hear those sounds. Now, I use a lot of those in the edit of the film as like sound transition things. So I'm kind of sick of Westing. So there's a lot of like sound editing that goes into it in Westing. So I'm just kind of like, okay, I've used enough of that. I'm like, I've edited with it, which once you've edited with something means that you've basically spent 18 months like thinking about something, whatever. So like, I'm kind of like done with that. Then, you know, Slanted still, you could pop it on. It's still perfect. It just plays perfect. It just goes, sure does. It's just like, easy to listen to, very fun to listen to. It's joyous in a way that, like, when I first heard it back in, you know, 94 or whatever, 93, it was like, oh, this is so smart and complicated and prickly. And now I just hear it as joyous and
yes.
youthful, you know? And then, and Crooked Rain, I actually like Crooked Rain. Crooked Rain, I feel like I have to be in a mood for.
Oh, yeah.
Partly. Yeah, not in a bad way, but just in a more like I feel like Crooked Rain makes me cry. Like it's such a beautiful record.
It's also very nostalgic.
It's so nostalgic. It's about nostalgia. Yeah. In fact, like the record itself is about that. It's about like, it's also about how poisonous nostalgia is. It's like, it's about all those things at once. And like, I feel like it, maybe it's just the fact that it was the first I really listened to. But yeah, so Wowie Zowie is my go-to. I'd say like Wowie Zowie, I just think is like, Wowie Zowie feels like I'm walking into my own home and I'm spending time with like my favorite brain cells, you know, like I just like that is like my thing. And then Bright in the Corners, I could listen to Bright in the Corners any day. And Terror Twilight, I think is mostly not good. That's how I feel about it. Like, I think Terror Twilight kind of just like, I can't really get into it. I feel like there's some great songs. And I think like songs like Speak See, Remember, that's a great song that I just don't, I feel it's kind of underrated. It has a really great rocking part and I really like enjoy, I enjoy how weirdly angular and strange and bubbly that song is. But like,
I like how you use And Don't Cry in the film.
Yeah. And Don't Cry is a perfect song, but it also is too perfect. It's like, it's like, And Don't Cry on Bright in the Corners would have sounded better. It sounds like a band that doesn't want to be there. And that bums me out. And
it's
that
was a bummer of a record. Yes.
And that's the feeling. That's the feeling that I held for such a long time. So Terror Twilight comes out. When they broke up, I was not bummed. I was like, oh, good. I was like happy that they didn't have to hang out with each other anymore. Right. Like that's as a fan, I didn't know anything. As a fan, I was like, these guys are kind of, they don't seem into it anymore. And like, I just want them to rest. You know? So I held that feeling for such a long time. And then what I told Alex at the beginning of the Pavements process, I was like, you just don't understand. Like, if we were to see Malkmus trying hard to be good at Pavement, and then the rest of the guys following suit, trying hard to be good at Pavement in their 50s, that will carry such an emotional value for real Pavement fans, because we didn't know whether we were supposed to try hard at liking them. We didn't know if we were morons for loving them as much as we did, or were we part of the joke, or were we right in the end? And I just like, so seeing the early rehearsal footage, I was just like, which shot by Rob Kolodny, who's a brilliant cinematographer and a director and an editor in his own right. And we worked together on a bunch of different projects and projects that I've directed that he shot and projects that he's directed that I've shot. And Alex, we have like a whole little group of people that work together. And it, just seeing that early footage, I was just like, yeah, this has an emotional weight that I don't think Alex quite understood, because he hadn't held on to that sort of weird feelings since 99, right? So that, I think that's something that's going on in the movie too. I think that's why people who really love the band can accurately report that they find it very emotional.
Yeah.
You know, watching it. I think it's just because we just didn't know that we were supposed, that they loved it as much as we did, and that we were allowed to love it as much as we did. And this last tour kind of gave us that feeling. Yeah, you're allowed to love it this much. And that's why I think it's this moment that the film's part of.
That's really well put. It was fun. It was joyous to see them in 2022 and 2023. I saw them in Central Park in 2010. And
so did I, yeah.
That was my first time seeing them, because I didn't get into them, Robert, until 99. So it's like I was super late to the party. I, you know, hung on to that rock and roll, like the straight ahead mainstream rock, for quite a while. And it wasn't until the late 90s that I started listening to indie rock. Listening to people go, oh man, 2010 was like a phone-in job, you know. For me, I really enjoyed it because it was my first time seeing them. It was in Central Park. That was special. You know, that was pretty fucking cool. But I went to the Fonda show. And you were there. I mean, that was otherworldly. That was like,
it was otherworldly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the 2010, I have a fondness for that because I brought my kids, you know, so my daughter was two or two and a half, three, something like that. Two. I guess she was two or maybe, yeah, two, something like that. She's running around. My son had been born, both of their first shows that they ever got to go to was Pavement and Central Park. And both of them, my son Wilkie loves different kinds of music. He's more of a hip hop guy, and my daughter is completely indie rock, and she's very eclectic in her taste. And so is he. But Pavement's, you know, she still will say Pavement's her favorite band. It's almost like our psychic connection at this point. Like we both just say, of course, Pavement's our favorite band, even though I bet she likes a lot of things plenty, you know, just as much or more. Her name's Ella. And just Ella and Wilkie running around Central Park, you know, while Grounded's playing in the background. I've got video of it. It's just like my favorite. It's like really one of the great memories. And it was really hard. If you know, I have two babies, basically. Oh, yeah. And my poor, poor wife, Tiana, like having to like... She was like, I had to convince her to do it. And she's like, I know this is a big deal. We should do it. But like, are you kidding? And it was just, you know, so magical. So I don't even remember thinking like phone in or this or that. I know they weren't getting along very well. I mean, that was very clear, and that's why it didn't last very long. And what was nice about this is they got along.
Yeah,
they really did. I mean, or you know, they got along, but also like you see it in the movie. You know, Malkmus will just kind of like, he kind of runs the show as he should. And then he kind of like apologizes a little bit sometimes. And then like, he's like bossing people around. And then he's like making fun of people. And then he's like, I'm sorry. And he's like, hey, that was really good. Like I think they're more comfortable who they are. And like Spiral's more comfortable being himself. And I, you know, Westy's always been comfortable.
Yeah.
I think Bob is unstoppable. And Mark is just the best dude. Like, I think like, and then Rebecca. Rebecca's an amazing addition. I think Rebecca is obviously, and I'm, you know, the MVP of the last tour. Like she, the coherence of the songs just benefits so much from what she brought to the table. I think it's true. And I think you see that in the film.
Yeah. And she was in a tough position. I mean, These are a bunch of dudes, and they've known each other since, you know, 1990 in some cases, 1997 in other cases. They've known each other for a long fucking time. And, yeah, you know, for her to creep in, I spoke with her on the show, and, you know, she did say it was easy peasy. Like they were so accommodating and so welcoming. And she didn't have any trouble at all.
I think they needed her. I think they knew they needed her. They knew that she brought something that elevated the show very much so. I really think that. And I think that that's awesome. I mean, the one little snippet of information I can give you is that we're working on a soundtrack for the film, which will be a release. And she's great on all the tracks.
Oh, that's wicked. Any new tracks?
It's you should listen to it. That's all I'll say.
Oh, excellent. Nice. Nice little breadcrumb there. Okay. So, should we, talk about the movie, some of the questions I had for you? I mean, I really want to get into just how you fucking wrap your head around like a film where in some instances there's five or six different things happening on the screen at once. Some of them are like really cohesive, and some of them are, it's like you said, it's like Wowie Zowie. It's, you know, it's sometimes it makes complete sense, and other times it seems not stream of consciousness, but sort of more fragmented or broken.
Sure.
How do you, like, where do you start with that? Do you do traditional storyboarding and things like that, or?
No, I mean, there's definitely, well, no. I mean, so I'll start with just saying that Westy nailed it at the Venice premiere of the film and the Q&A when he said it's a three-sided movie, just like it's a, like, well, he's always a three-sided record. I want to get that, like, that is the thing, is like, yeah, I mean, if you rewind, just the origin story of the movie, first of all, I've been working with Alex Perry for a decade.
Okay.
And I've known him longer than that. I've edited many of his films, going back to his breakthrough film, Listen Up Philip, in 2014. And we went to Sundance together. And I'm a director myself. So I make my own films, and my films are all, most of them are like hybrid fiction, nonfiction, documentary things. Yeah. So the thing is this, so I have a lot of experience with mixing fiction and nonfiction in elements that are combustible elements to do different things. And, my films are like kind of serious. I mean, they've gone to Sundance, and my film Processions on Netflix, and was shortlisted for an Oscar and all that stuff. And so like, they're like serious. They're like serious and like formalist and heavier. And then every time I work with Alex, like we made a film called Her Smell a couple years ago. And before that, we made all these other films. Like it's just so liberating, because I get to do whatever. I mean, we just basically, his main way of making films is kind of like, let's just fuck with people. Let's just like, let's just push. If it's weird and it's adventurous and it's like, I've never really seen this before is kind of our, you know, MO. He just really, I mean, it's like to his own career detriment in some ways, because like he's got a name and everybody's excited about his new movies, but it's very difficult for him to get films funded these days because he just like wants to make adventurous things. And in the editing room, that just means that translates as let's just do whatever we feel is exciting. And that is really rare, right? Like that's extremely rare. So that's the ethos that we brought already. And in like 2020, he called me and he was like, you know, I was contacted by Matador Records. There's like, they want to make a Pavement film and they want me to do it. They want it to be this non-traditional hybrid thing. Do you want to be involved? And I was like, a hybrid documentary fiction thing about my favorite band. Motherfucker, you're not making this without me. Like, it's like that kind of thing. And so like, and he was like, fine, whatever. And we have a funny, like brother, like relationship, where we bicker and fight all the time. Sure. And it's very funny. And so I was like, yeah, you're not allowed to, as if he couldn't say, fuck you, I could do what I want. He's the director. And so basically like he conceived of these threads after doing a long research phase through the pandemic. He conceived of these threads of the very bad biopic based on the Wowie Zowie era, the musical based on the whole idea of a jukebox musical for Pavement. Now, the funny thing about that is the whole idea of a jukebox musical for Pavement in 2020 is one of the most absurd things you can imagine. In 2024, or when the movie comes out nationally next year in April, May 2025, that is going to be not a crazy thought because we have Sufjan Stevens and all these other people doing like indie rock jukebox musicals or whatever. So like, it was a great joke when he said it. I was like, oh my God, that's so funny. And then it became a little bit of a problem in the edit because it was like, well, it's not just funny and on his face anymore because people could imagine Pavement after the 2023 tour having a jukebox musical. So anyway, so that element, all the museum, all these elements, and these are the perfect Alex elements because Alex likes to fuck with people and he likes to do things that are weirdly esoteric, detail driven things that are like little worlds that he gets to live in. And then essentially he trusts me on the edit side. So it's like, let's do something now with this. And the original idea that Alex had was like, let's live in each of these worlds for a little while and then maybe start intermingling those worlds. And I was like, it goes back to that conversation about the footage that Rob Kolodny shot, which is incredibly good documentary footage that I was like, that is more of the foundation of this than you think. And so we just started with the split screens right away, like archival documentary. And then basically inspired partly by the war film Dunkirk, which has all these like threads that you follow and then you introduce new threads and then somehow they convene together in this way. We just were like, we just have to seed all these stories. And then the big structural trick is that it's actually all completely linear, beginning, middle, and end. And it's just that you're jumping around in all these ways. And sometimes you have, you know, some footage contradicting other footage. You know, we got to use some of Lance Bang's archive. We had a strict cap on how much of Lance's footage we could use, but Lance has amazing material. We could use that, some of that footage. We got this woman, Deb, who had Deb Pastor, who had was them with them through Wowie Zowie and through Lollapalooza era. We got to use a lot of her footage. And so like, we could just create this sort of feeling and tapestry of the story, you know? And it was like the most fun because it was just like, all right, well now, okay, let's find some stock footage of Stockton, California, and then mix that with this weird interview they did. And then let's cut to the rehearsal for, you know, Why They Say Nothing Ever Happens, like Zombies, which is a reference to a zombie movie that mentions Stockton and that Alex had said like, oh, we got to get that into the day. So we're just like pulling references on references.
Wow.
On references and having, you know, building out sequences so that it just like, it just feels constantly moving, constantly energetic. And
it's,
and look, and this is a band that, you know, Malcolm says in the movie, you know, I pretend, I'm like, I imagine what a singer might be on stage. Like, this is a band that was referenced other music, referenced the idea of being in a band as much as they were a band itself. You know, like, so it, all this stuff makes complete sense in the mental landscape of Pavement.
It's a fascinating project for sure. What about the music? Did you, you know, you mentioned earlier that when you get into an edit, you're listening to things over and over and over again, and sometimes it can become, you know, tiresome. You had to spend a lot of time with a lot of Pavement music. What did it change your relationship?
The fact that I could edit Pavement music, just because it's like, it's hard to say. I mean, it's like, it's so in my bones. Like, it's more in my bones than maybe any other art, Pavement music, you know, like we're like, I, you know, editing, I, you know, a song to Stockton footage, I was like, oh, I felt like I'd already done it in my head. Like, oh, this song is about Stockton, and so I'm going to edit the Stockton footage, or, you know, the Grounded scene, or using, like, oh, like when Cut Your Hair comes in, like, I had already experienced my thinking about what Cut Your Hair means for that band in 1993 when they wrote that song and are playing that song and referencing themselves as characters in their own story about bands and all the, and this dumb line, like saying, they're saying the word career, but it sounds like Korea just because it's too on the nose to say the word career. And so, like, I've already thought a lot about what it meant for them to do that. So then putting that into the film, I'm like, yeah, that's where it goes in the story. This is their breakthrough. This is right after they're starting to talk about, like, maybe we could sell some records and maybe we could be this band that everybody wants us to be, but we kind of don't want to be that band, but we could still try our best to be that band, but we kind of really don't want to do that. And it's like that sort of ambivalence and tension that the songs are about. Like, I've already thought about that. So, like, it was a joy. It just felt like I was giving, you know, like, Malcolmus is famously has this amazing way of talking where every sentence contradicts the previous sentence. Right. And this is how I would say about editing Malcolmus. I was like, oh, I can, like, take the words he's saying and I can make them make sense without all the contradictions that he always does. And then he's just saying these profound things about the growth of the band. That's what I felt like the music. Like, I could put it in a story that made sense to me as a fan who thought a lot about what it means to be Pavement in the story, you know? And honestly, like, as a working artist, independent filmmaker myself, like, a lot of that way of thinking about what it means to be authentic, what it means to be yourself, all this other stuff, which is in the music itself. I had thought about that in terms of my own career and life and my own work. So it came really organically to use it. So no, I didn't get sick of the songs. There's also a lot of songs. I mean, the very first thing I did was I went to the Portland footage that Rob Kolodny had shot. And I edit those into like 5-hour sequences that are just rehearsal days. And that was just to get my head in the mode. And like, I love them so much. And I just love doing that so much because he had two cameras. He was running two cameras. So I could edit these into little or extremely long movies, like 5-hour movies, basically. And that was just reorienting myself with the music and thinking about the music. And then I was allowed to cut it up and put it anywhere I want and make transitions out of it and build sequences. And it was a joy.
Yeah, I bet. Man, you got to see all that rehearsal footage.
I have all of it.
You are, you know, beyond super fan. The fact that you're a giant fan and then you get that kind of access is just so fantastic. Well, Robert, should we, flip the script here and listen to the song of the week. Number one song.
Sounds great.
All right. We'll be back right after this.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Hey, this is Bob Nastanovich from Pavement. Thanks for listening. And now on with a countdown.
One. Holy fuck, it's number one. We did it. Well, the fanfare, we just had some sort of jet fly overhead. There are fireworks. This is just pomp and circumstances out the yin yang, I suppose you could say. And that's all for our number one song that you selected with your top 20 ballots. Frontwards. It's a great fucking song. Does it belong at number one? I don't know. What's it about? I don't know. Let's get Robert's take on all this. Robert, what did you think the first time? I guess you would you have heard it on Watery? Like, did you go backwards and get Watery?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, that was like I said, I'd heard Crooked Rain and then Slanted, and I was like, what else? What else? I had to consume more. And yeah, I mean, to me, Frontwards was, I think it's a perfect number one song, because I think it is the song that when I heard it, I was like, because, you know, I was in love with Pavement, but I wasn't even sure what it was. I was like trying to work my head around, like, what is this music? Like, what is where is the line of sincerity and intelligence and irony and all these elements that are built in? And then Frontwards, I heard that. I was like, oh, this is just a perfect song. And then the line, I got style, miles and miles, so much style that it's wasted, is one of the great, like they weren't slackers. They weren't weirdos. They were cool.
Yeah. Dripping with cool.
Dripping with cool. Like, Malcolmus was fucking cool. And I was like, you could be cool and be smart. And you could be like, but you also knew that it was like an ironic line, because, like, what was the style? Like, flannels and corduroys, you know? Like, and he's like, so flannel and corduroys means you can go to the thrift store and you could spend $8 on an outfit and you could walk into, you know, a Cat Power show.
Right.
And you could be like, I'm a cool guy. I'm just like, I got a lot of style. I got swagger. And that was just like, what? Like, I was just like, it just was so cool. That song is so cool. It's perfect. The lyrics are perfect. The rhythm is perfect. The drive of that song, the sort of like melodic slow motion heaviness of it. It's like, it's a badass song. I love it. And importantly, it's the song that we build to in Pavements. It's the song that you put at the end of an act. It's like, it is your needle drop song. Like, you're like, let's live in this song for a minute. It is the needle drop song for Pavements. When you land at Frontwards with the full band, with Gary doing his thing and the whole, everybody there, everybody rocking, I got style, miles and miles. It also says, it also has one of the most important lines for understanding the film, which begins the entire film with a disclaimer. It said, the stories you hear, you know, they never add up. Which is, that's our MO for the whole movie. So yeah, great number one.
Yeah.
Love the song dearly.
Yeah. Now, I wonder if you have any idea of what SM is trying to say in this one. I mean, I know it can be tough, right? But do you have a line on it at all?
The thing is the dude was a genuine poet with these things. I mean, it's just like, I'm the only one searching for you. And if I get caught, the search is through. It's just like, that's just dumb and circular and hilarious. And the stories you hear, you know, they never add up. I hear the natives fussing up the data chart. Be quiet, the weather's on the night news. I mean, to me, when he says, be quiet, the weather's on the night news, I'm like, that's the smartest dude. That is like great humor. Just like making fun of old people sitting around. And just like somehow making fun of everything, but also just being like slippery and poetic and writerly at the same time. In the film, you actually see, you know, them going through, let's see, what is the part where they go through? They say like, hold on. Yeah. Now she's the only one who always inhales. Paris is stale and it's war if we fail. Like, okay. You know, in the migrant hotels, they never sleep. They never will. I mean, it's just like your cigarette cuts to the inside. So like, so he says in the film, you see them, you see Bob and Malcolm is sitting around talking about these lyrics. And what I love about this little mini scene is, and this is from footage that Lance shot, they're trying to figure out what he meant. And he's like, maybe it's because of the wind, because Stockton is really windy. You know, like, and so I just love that scene because to me, this is just like a guy writing things that rhyme, doing cool shit, making fun of things, making fun of the idea that lyrics are supposed to mean anything anyway by having every line be really meaningful, but none of it doing anything together except for just being catchy and exciting. And then you see in the film a couple years later, they're like, wait, what did I mean by that? Is this about the wind? And I'm like, okay, I didn't know that you guys would be doing that. And yeah, I love it.
I call it Stephen's word salad. You know, it's just, it's like you said, it's not that it's not meaningful, but it's incongruent. It just sort of is angular and incongruent. I don't know how else to put it.
But I look, in the part of my Pavement origin story was that I was the guy who was like, no, Mike and Danny and Thad, these lyrics are deeply meaningful. And they were like, you're a loser. You're so stupid. These are not meaningful lyrics. These are like, you are a dumb mark if you think these are meaningful. Like, he's taking the piss out of everybody. And I was like, but why am I crying then? Like, why do I have feelings? Like, why are these things being evoked in me that makes me think deep thoughts about the world that we inhabit? Like the lyrics to Grave Architecture, for example, you know, like why do I feel all these emotions when I listen to the songs that are connected to the lyrics? And so I always thought, word salad's fine as a definition, I guess. I always just thought it's like, it's just absurdist poetry. And it's absurd to say that it's poetry because Malcolmus would be like, well, that's not poetry. You know, like but I think it is. I think it was absurdist poetry. One key thing is like, he says, you know, I can't really write lyrics like that anymore.
Really?
And I think that that is actually really, really important because I think in the movie we talk about it. It's this guy standing around the Whitney, you know, looking at all this art that's making him feel all these things and think all these thoughts and have all these complicated ideas about things and whatever. And he's writing this absurdist poetry and it's coming from this place of ambition and youth and love and excitement. And none of us hold on to those things. Those things go away, you know? And I think the movie, one of the things we want to do is honor that spirit, you know, honor the spirit of that youthful spirit that is fleeting, you know?
Youthful spirits that's fleeting, that is like the log line for Crooked Rain to me, you know? It's just going back to that nostalgia piece.
On a skateboard, and that is just humming.
So great. I used to walk to that song everywhere, and to that record, and that song just, I always felt like in my walk, I was making a music video. You know what I mean? Like I was in a music video. I would turn my head and look a certain way at something, and it was really fucked, but it was a lot of fun.
Well, that I think that thinking is what guided the edit of the film, because that's how I felt too. And the good news for us old dudes is that there is a whole bunch of young people who like the band now and have the same feelings, because it turns out Pavement was right. I remember writing, I wrote a piece in NC State's newspaper Technician about Bright in the Corners. And I remember being like, so, okay, the new sound for Pavement is this clean sound they're going to do the notes are all going to be really crisp and clean and angular and long form. And there's going to, and I was like, look, they've been right before, they'll be right again. Pavement was right. So I trust them. Like I trust that this is where their band should go, because they were right when they changed, when they decided to take a noise band and turn it into Slanted. They were right when they decided to make Ironic and Sincere at the same time with Crooked Rain and that nostalgia. They were right when they decided to blow up the whole idea of the record itself with Wally's Alley. And now they're right again. I trust them. And that's how I kind of feel. Like I feel like the music is trustworthy. And kids that hear it now hear that. Like there's something about this music which is so deeply authentic to these people who made it that you can trust it, you know?
Oh, I love it. Yeah, we'll wrap on that. Robert, it's been really great spending this time with you. Obviously, you have, you know, one project to plug, but is there anything else that you would like to mention? This episode's going to come out on the 23rd, I believe, of this month.
Oh, well, this our group of filmmakers are doing a lot of cool stuff. So Alex Perry, you know, he's got a video, a long form essay film called Video Heaven, which is about video stores, which is the only Alex Perry could have made this up. The film I talked about, Rob Kolodny, his film that he directed, that I edited and produced, called The Featherweight, is going to be released just before Pavement is, nationwide and digital platforms everywhere. We just got done with a festival run, and that's about the boxer Willie Pep, and it plays with fiction, nonfiction in a cool way too. And then I'm constantly working on films and wow. things. I'm directing a couple new movies and editing some stuff. And Pavement will be, look, the 30th anniversary of Wowie Zowie is coming up, and Pavements is being released, and we're going to do as much as we can to give the Pavement fans out there some cool shit to dive into as they get into the movie and get into the moment.
We are chomping at the bit, I promise you. I have one final question for you about the film. I know I said we'd wrap, but will we see in a bonus feature or anything like that a complete version of the musical?
We have great hopes for what the musical can do, and I'll leave it at that, because I think it, you know, we love the way it's working in the film, and it did, you know, it ran for a three day run.
I know, I wanted to go so bad.
It was a lot of fun. We have hopes for the musical.
Okay, cool. I like the breadcrumbs again. Fuck. I like most carbohydrates, though. So there's that. Robert, I want to thank you so much for taking some time with me this afternoon to talk about the project, to talk about your Pavement origin story, and most importantly, to blow out the candles on this cake that we have baked for an entire year, people. Congratulations, we fucking made it. Wash your goddamn hands. Thanks for listening to Meeting Malcolmus, a Pavement podcast, where we count down the top 50 Pavement tracks as selected by you. If you've got questions or concerns, please shoot me an email, jd@meetingmalcolmus.com. Podcasts and such.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.